Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. HRN is food radio supported by you. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org.
This episode is brought to you by Wisconsin Cheese. We've been making cheese in Wisconsin since before we were even a state, which may be one reason why we win so many awards for it. It's what happens when a whole state dreams in cheese. Find your next favorite cheese at wisconsincheese.com.
Hey, 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 welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on Heritage Radio Network. This is our second show of 2023. We're recording on Tuesday, January 17th, 2023. I'm really looking forward to the Craft Malt Conference. It's coming to Portland, Maine on March 16th to 18th. And the executive director, Jesse Poussard, put together a really great lineup of speakers and participants in the conference. So we'll be talking about the Craft Malt Conference. So let's go around the room. Everyone can introduce themselves, say your name and where you're working. Of course, we'll start with Jesse.
Hi, everybody. Jesse here. I'm the executive director of the Craft Maltsters Guild, and I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for organizing the show, Jesse. Really looking forward to our conversation. And Hillary?
Hi, I'm Hillary Burrill from Rabbit Hill Farms. We're a farm and a malt house in New Jersey, and I'm also on the board of directors of the Craft Maltsters Guild.
Great. And Josh?
Hey, everyone. I'm Joshua Buck. I'm one of the owners at the Maine Malt House. We are a farm and malt house in northern Maine.
Okie doke. And Sean?
Hey, everyone. I'm Sean Towers. I'm one of the founders and brewers of The Seed, a living beer project in Atlantic City, New Jersey.
All right. So, Jesse, I am so looking forward to being in Portland, Maine, March 16th to 18th for the Craft Malt Conference. How long have you been working on this? Because I've been ready to go since last year.
I've been ready to go since 2020, Jimmy. It's a long time coming. We actually started planning this conference in 2020, and then of course, you know, the pandemic happened and we had to delay it, and the pandemic continues, and so we had to delay it a second time. But the third time's the charm, I think, and we're going to be in Portland, Maine in just a couple of months, so I'm excited about it, too.
That's great. And I will say, just give you credit. I mean, I only met you during the pandemic. You put together some really great virtual programming, and I sat in on one of the virtual craft malt conferences. How hard was that, and what's your takeaway from the last couple of years of doing things virtually?
Whew. You know, the first year was definitely it was definitely a big challenge the first year because, you know, it was the first time any of us had ever really had to do something like that with our organization. And it was my first time figuring out how to do a virtual event. But it ended up coming together great. And I would credit that to just a lot to choosing the right people to help us make it happen. We partnered with some great videography and virtual event management folks that just made it smooth and run well. And I'm really organized too, so that helped a lot.
I know you are. You're the best. Oh, yeah. And then Hillary, we've had you on a couple of times, and I love what you're doing at Rabbit Hill Malt House in southern Jersey. Just tell us what you're looking forward to about the conference.
I think I'm most looking forward to getting back together with our community. I mean, as great as the virtual conferences were, and I think one of the things that was really amazing about the first virtual conference was how engaged people were, even in the online platform. But there still isn't a replacement for actual in-person sitting down, having a beer together, talking about the day's sessions and what you learned or what was a thing that sparked some new idea for you. So I'm most looking forward to that, just that feeling of community and camaraderie that we get when we all get together to talk about malting and brewing and distilling.
Yeah. I know last year you won a big prize at the Craft Malt Cup.
Yeah, thank you. We did. We were really proud of the malt that we're making, and we'll see who gets to take home the trophy this year. We've got, I think, 12 medals going out this year, Jesse. It's in four different categories.
Yeah, 12 medals. And of course, yes, the Malt Cup will go to whoever comes out on top as best of show.
Yeah, it's going to be exciting. And then, Josh, you tell us about your background, because I think isn't your family also a farm family?
Yes. Yeah. So we started out farming. My grandfather actually started the farm back in 58. In our area, it's typically all the farms up here are potato farms. And usually guys will plant small grains as a rotation crop. In 2015, we started the malt house. We started trying to diversify a little bit, trying to get away from the potatoes a little bit. And then in 2017, we actually got rid of the potatoes altogether, and we switched over to just a small grains farm now. All the grains we grow are coming right through our malt house. So
you're way up in Maine. How far are you from Portland?
So we're like 4.5 hours. We do it in like 4 hours early in the morning when we go see customers. But
give us some Maine primers, but not for Portland, like Maine up country. What do you call it? What's your tallest mountain?
So up where we are, so we're in Aroostook County. So we're known as the Crown of Maine. We're like the largest county in Maine. The tallest mountain in Maine is Mount Katahdin. I think the summit is exactly a mile above sea level.
Crops that you grow?
Our biggest crops are potatoes. Other big industries in Maine, we have a very large logging lumber industry, especially in northern Maine and western Maine. Lobster is a very large industry in Maine.
And then what are some of the breweries that are embracing the craft malt movement in Maine?
There's a lot. I think I haven't looked in a while to see how many breweries we have in the state. I think it's like 140, 150-ish maybe. We're selling to maybe 110, 120 of them. So a lot of them are embracing it. Some of our bigger customers are Bissell Brothers Brewing, Allagash Brewing, Gagan Brothers Brewing out of Bangor. Or some of Sebago Brewing are some of the big users for us.
Wow. So this is a special state. If 120 breweries are buying from you, that's amazing.
Yeah, absolutely. Wow. For sure.
Oh, great. And then Sean, the Sea Beer in Atlantic City. Great to talk to you again.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having me again.
Yeah. So, I think we've seen with the craft malt movement, you know, the farms, the maltsters, and the breweries are always important. Just tell us what craft malt means to you and what you'll be doing at the conference.
Yeah, sure. I mean, craft malt means everything to us, just like any ingredient we use. If you think about it, like cooking, like a restaurant, a chef, you're only as good as your ingredients are, and then what you can do with them. So we're very fortunate to be, in proximity-wise, very close with Hillary and family in Rabbit Hill. So we use their malt a lot. Our whole lager program and our whole Saison program is entirely their malt, and we use some form of their malt in every beer we do. So as far as the conference goes, I'll be speaking on a panel directed towards the use of local malt in lager production. And some different viewpoints on the whens, whys, hows, and the other decisions that go into using local malt specifically in lager and or not using local malt specifically in lager. And I'm really excited just to be a part of it and to get in the same room with all these people. I think a lot of the best conversations come when you bring a bunch of people that are just super passionate about specific subjects or just focus and passion in general and just allow ideas, conversations, and knowledge and experience to kind of flow openly. So I'm looking forward to being in the room with a lot of people that know a lot more about local malt than I do.
Well, that looks like a really exciting session. I know that you're on with Mike from Sacred Profane and John Hall is the moderator. That's pretty great.
Yeah, and we have a to-be-determined person, a third person also going to be on that panel.
So, Jesse, I bet you're just living and breathing every detail of this conference right now.
Oh, my gosh, yes. It's literally like every part of my – every day I'm doing something related to this event pretty much, leading up to it. Yeah, this is the crunch time.
Yeah. It's exciting. I'm looking forward to being there. Just some more intro, just questions just to get everything going. When I was thinking about malt today, so I'm going to ask myself the first question, and then if anyone else wants to answer in their own words, they can as well. When I think of malt, I think of the brewing process, and everyone's favorite is the smell of cooking malt on brew day. Now, that, I think that's a smell that people can relate to. So anyone else want to tell me what they think of when they think of malt?
I'm glad you think that's a great smell, because a lot of neighbors to breweries wouldn't exactly agree with you, but we think it's fantastic also.
Yeah. I think the smell of mash, you know, when you mash in that, it just smells like hot oatmeal or something. It's good.
Yeah, and then that's a way when you think about malt that people can relate to, because if you've ever smelt it, you do think of baking bread, right?
Yeah.
So, Sean, what were you going to say?
I was going to go a little different direction. When I think about malt, for us, a lot of it gets back to like just that connection with your surroundings and with your land specifically for us. And that always ties back to our personal ethos of Saison that we try to drive through everything. But it's become such a heavy focus of the wine world, of course, forever, is the sense of terroir. And I have a lot of background. I still have a full-time job in aquaculture where marois and the water in which some of your food is coming from plays so heavily into how that food's experienced. So for us, the malt angle on that is no different. It's, you know, it's the main ingredient that starts everything. Like, you can make the hoppiest beer possible, but it's not going to ferment if there's no sugars in there. So for us, just it's a foundation, and I think that's real important.
And anyone else want to say what they think of when they think of malt? If not, it's okay.
It's a hard question, I guess.
Well, I guess I'll ask you, Josh, like, you know, Aroostook County, you know, is there a character of your malt compared to like Hillary's, the South Jersey malt?
Yeah, I think so. I think every area probably has their own contributions to it as far as like what the soil is made of and the water that they're using in the process and all that. So, yeah, I think there is a difference. I think you could also, if you wanted to try mimicking other malts, that it can be done in a brew or a malt house as well. We've done that with a few different breweries trying to match up a malt they were using that they're either having a hard time to get or they wanted to switch to a local product.
And are you malting other farmers' grains as well as your own farm's grains?
A little bit, not as far as up here. Yeah, we do contract. Actually, the last year it went down some. We actually grew our farm side a little bit to grow more acres ourselves. We try to contract to help spread the risk out a little bit. It's getting harder to do though because some of the bigger potato farmers are focusing on their small grains. And a few of them actually have cut small grains out of their rotation of crops altogether. They're just putting grass down. So it's been a little bit kind of an unforeseen challenge that we've been facing.
From my understanding of Maine grains and that movement, wasn't it that the Maine farmers had kept small grains as their cover crop and rotate crop, and that's why some people say Maine's ahead of the curve. Is that true?
Yeah, I suppose I hadn't heard that exactly, but I know for years it was everyone like in our area would always have. We're always growing, like on our farm, for example, we always grew like a little bit of oats, a little bit of barley. They all went to the elevator. It was like one of those things where the joke was that every 5 years you would make your money back on it. You were really just doing it to get the land or the ground ready for the potato crop. Within the last probably 10 years, there was a little bit of a shift where everyone started focusing a lot more on their grain crops. Trying to add more value to them. And then in the last probably 2 years, for some guys, they sold their grain drills, sold their combines, and they just want to plant a mix of grasses as a rotation and then plow it in.
Yeah.
We're hoping it goes the other way where they decide that the grasses aren't working for them. They want to grow small grains again, but that's how it is at the moment.
No, it's neat. You know, there's so much to talk about at the Craft Malt Conference. Hillary, what are some of the things you talk about with other farmers and maltsters?
I think I talk a lot about what types of grain, like what types of barley we're malting. I just got back at the end of last week. I was out in Michigan for their Brewers Guild Conference, and Michigan has a lot of similarities climate-wise to New Jersey. They grow some spring barley and some winter barley as well. We can grow spring barley and winter barley on our farm as well. And I was just talking a lot with the farmers and the researchers and the other maltsters about the differences that we've seen between malting spring grains and malting winter grains and where we kind of think they could go with more winter grain production in Michigan. So it's really the changing climate and how that changes what types of barley you can grow in your area, and then how that affects what you do in the malt house has been a lot of what I've been talking about with people lately.
And then, Jesse, the conference. So give a shout out to a couple of the other panels and conversations that are going on.
Sure thing. I would say a few of the ones that I'm really excited about are, one, to listen to the keynote with Dr. Rob Arnold, author of The Terroir of Whiskey. He's going to dig into some, you know, really kind of connect the dots, you know, from how plant breeding, agronomy, and like flavor chemistry and sensory science all connect back to the flavors that you're experiencing in beer and whiskey. So that sounds really interesting. And on Saturday, there's a really interesting talk with David Griggs from Crisp Malt, he's from England, but it's about the production of Scotch whiskey. Kind of gives a background, a little history of it, the role of malt, and kind of opportunities and challenges there. So I know those are two like completely different things, but I found those interesting. There's also some really cool talks on breeding malting barley varieties for non-traditional growing regions, featuring New York State's Cornell University researcher, Dr. Mark Sorrell.
Oh, yeah, Mark Sorrell, wow.
And Heather Darby from the University of Vermont is also going to be talking about how barley and other small grains can be used to improve soil health and you know, diversify farms, so you know, hopefully lending to Joshua's, you know, hope that more farmers will consider bringing back small grains into their rotation if they can see the benefits.
Wow. And then a big part of this conference is a big anniversary for you guys, right?
Yes. So the Guild was founded in 2013, July 24th, 2014, to be exact. This year is going to be our 10-year anniversary, our birthday. It's a big deal. So I think, you know, the Guild turning 10 says a lot about craft malt. We've reached it.
Oh, yeah.
A new level.
Oh, yeah. You guys are amazing. Let's do the whoop. Army can put a little cheers in afterwards or something. But we are back to the crab walk conversation. The whole thing is so complicated in that it's, I still can't believe that the whole craft malt, you know, guild is a movement. I mean, this is huge, you know, and what's happened in 10 years is unbelievable. You know, I believe that the best beer comes from craft malt, of course. Who wants to give it a stab to the importance of this organization and its impact?
That's so tough.
That's a big one.
That's a huge question.
That's a big one. I think.
Well, that's what people want to know, because honestly, I get mixed feedback from some brewers. Some brewers are, of course, using craft malt. Some aren't really thinking about it. But it's bigger. It's bigger than that.
I would like to try. For me, what I see the guild serving as is this organization that's anchoring the community and really, you know, serving as the organization that helps to promote the industry, to serve as this resource for education and networking for those within it. And we've really, from the get-go, really had a big emphasis on things like quality and safety and, you know, flavor. And I think because of the commitment to a lot of those things, and also just that commitment to being this really, this community hub for education has really fostered that kind of environment where this industry has been able to grow like it has.
If I could just piggyback on what Jesse's saying real quick, I think one of the most important things for what I would just call like the bulk of any population, not the niche folks who are searching something out specifically, is kind of as simple as Jesse put it, just organization and education. And to me, as a on the other side of this, not a grower, not a farmer, not a maltster, but as a brewer, I think it's the most important to have just more public awareness and more educational components, things, online meetings, conversations, just to let people know that, I mean, this might sound oversimplified, but that it's an option. Like, we've done some collabs with folks this year that haven't, in New Jersey, that haven't used Hillary's malt before. And when they start using it, they can look at the price point and say, actually, this really isn't cost prohibitive necessarily. And it's easy to work directly with the person who grew it and malted it themselves to answer questions. And I think I'm going to go ahead and order this again. And if that comes from just more public awareness, or just, you know, putting it in people's faces a little more for them to do their own research behind that or after that, I think that's super important.
Hillary?
Yeah. That's what I was going to just jump in and say, sort of the same thing, but Jesse and Sean pretty much just answered it. I think our first 10 years as an organization was really focused on promotion and education of ourselves, right? So making sure that our malt houses had the resources that they needed to grow, to educate themselves about making higher quality malts. And now I think that, I don't want to say that that job is done, but I do think that we are, as an organization, shifting our focus a little bit into how we can help promote craft malt at a wider scale. How can we bring that education to consumers, brewers or distillers who don't know how to use it or where it could fit into their program? That type of outward facing education and promotion is what I'm excited about for the next 10 years.
That's great. Sean, just how important is it to you as a brewer in Atlantic City, New Jersey, that you have a great local craft maltster like Hillary nearby?
Oh, it's awesome. Makes it nice and easy for us. Hillary does all the work and we get to reap the benefits of it. So.
Well, tell me about one beer, and both of you, I'd like you both to say something about the malt. One beer that you've used Rabbit Hill malt in.
Yeah, so like I mentioned earlier, our lager program is focused directly on Hillary's malt. I think lager is a beautiful showcase of malt in general, because there's nothing really to hide behind. They're very simple, very clean beers, obviously, for the most part, stylistically at least. But they take a lot of talent and experience and education to do properly. And they also take a keen eye towards quality of ingredients. So like our pale lagers, we have our first Helles inspired lager in a tank right now that we're going to continue lagering through the end of February that we're really stoked on. It's pretty much, I think it was about 85% Hillary's Pilsner malt and 15% of Munich malt from Abbot Hill as well. We do a very somewhat simple, kind of unique decoction process in our brew house that we think really allows us to get as much character complexity out of the grains that we can, so that we're not, you know, hiding or kind of wasting, for lack of a better term, anything that's so inherently baked into those grains. But the Helles in particular, the hopping level is low enough that I think it'll really allow all the nuance of that particular barley to shine.
Hillary, what's it like working with Sean at the Seed as the maltster?
It is so easy to work with the Seed. They are an amazing partner, and I've joked with them over and over again that they're our best salespeople. And I'll continue to say it because they do go out and speak the malt evangelizing talks to all of the other brewers that are in their community. So we always love working with people like that. And I think that they are a great partner for us because they're always excited to work with something new, right? So if I have time in my malt schedule to try and make a style that we haven't made before, or to maybe use a grain that we haven't used before, Sean and Amanda at the Seed are always like, yeah, just give us a few bags and we'll try and make something with it. So they're a great partner to try new things with, and always provide me with feedback so that I can then kind of go back to the drawing board if it's something that needs to be tweaked, or, you know, start making it again if it's something that worked right out of the gate.
And you've been very gracious with the timeline you allow for that feedback to get back to you.
It always gets here eventually.
Sean, did you have an aha moment with one of those little test batches?
I wish I had a beautiful aha story for you, but I don't think so, because my wife Amanda has been brewing professionally in New Jersey for about a decade now. So by the time we got our own project up and running, we'd had the opportunity to be lucky enough to work with Rabbit Hills Malt for a while, and we got to play with iterations of some of their malts over many years with other breweries. On a smaller scale, but still nonetheless. So by the time we got the Seed up and running, we kind of knew what we were getting into. We were lucky to know what we were getting into.
That's great. It's nice to just see a little behind the scenes of how this really works, because so many of us are just working on the scale as a home brewer or, you know, working in the industry. Big numbers. We don't really talk numbers on the show, but Jesse, considering that we're talking about the Craft Malt Conference, let's talk numbers. So this, in the terms of the state of craft malt, tell us about recent production increases.
Yeah, so in 2022, we did a production survey, and we discovered that since our last industry benchmarking survey, our industry has increased production by 60%, which in just the span of 3 years is quite a bit. So that was kind of exciting. So that was in 2019, levels were at about 15.5 million pounds annually. And in 2022, they were estimated at about 24.8 million pounds. So yeah, craft malt's on the rise. And I can say, you know, just anecdotally, I'm seeing that as well, just in the number of members that we have that are currently going through malt house expansions, or developing folks, you know, that are developing operations. I think Josh at Main Malt House actually is in the process of maybe some expansion at this moment. Maybe wrong.
Yeah, I feel like we're always expanding here. It's just, it's just one project after another. We just put in 2022, we put in our second 10 metric ton malting system, Saladin Bog. So we just got through that expansion. We are now expanding our grain cleaning and packaging is next on the list. It's coming in a few months. And then we'll be back to expanding the farm side of it. The barley intake side of it will be hopefully later this summer before harvest.
That's exciting.
You know, so walk me through this whole process, because I've been to Tor Estner's farm up in Finger Lakes, New York, and he's a guy that I knew years ago who's doing specialty grains. And I know that at least initially, the only person that was malting his grains was Valley Malt in Massachusetts, Andrea Stanley. And he had a lot of cool gadgets. I remember, like, he was the ultimate tinkerer with every piece of equipment he had. He had a MacGyver, and it was working perfectly, but he was always on it. Hillary and Josh, tell me a little bit about the equipment and how much of that you're doing. You know, is it just sorting? You know, what are the steps when you get your grain or after you harvest it? I don't really know anything.
Josh, do you want to go first?
I was hoping you'd go first so I could think about it, but I should go first.
No, it's okay. I was going to say, for us, you know, similar to Josh, we were growing small grains before we started the malt house. So we had on hand some of the equipment that we would need. And we also had some equipment that we could repurpose. So that's everything from the equipment that you need to plant grains, care for grains, and then a combine to harvest those grains. Then you need storage capacity, usually like silos, grain bins, so that you can hold those grains in good condition. And that's all stuff that you're doing and equipment that you need before you even get to the malt house. And then you need just conveyances, augers and belts, all of those different things to move grain from your storage into the malt house. And then you hit your malting equipment. So yes, we clean our grains beforehand, before we're malting. So you're cleaning and sizing. And then we're floor maltsters. So we have conical shaped steep tanks. A large floor for us to do our germination phase, and then a separate kiln. And so every malt house is going to have a little bit of a different setup. Every farm is going to have a little bit of a different setup. But I think something that Josh was starting to allude to is that you have kind of like the version that you start with and then the version that you want to get to help you produce things more efficiently and help you move grain more effectively. So I think right now we're in the phase of that continual expansion as well, where we've done a lot of little stepwise things to make our lives easier and increase our capacity. And now we have to figure out, like, where are we going from here? What's our final destination size-wise, and how can we make our work more efficient? So we're not just using repurposed things so that we've built it with intention.
And Hillary, just for you, because I know you had a family farm, is there a benchmark, like what percentage of land, for example, are you going to dedicate to grains and malt versus other products?
So on our farm right now, we are probably around a third of our land for the grains that go through the malt house. I think we could increase that a little bit more, but not too much more, because we want to make sure that we're maintaining a really healthy and sustainable rotation on our farm. So if we grow too much more, then we'll have to start working with neighboring farmers to make sure that we have adequate barley supply and other grain supply coming in.
Yeah. And Josh, anything we missed?
So I'm not sure if Hillary, if they do like grain drying as well. So it's a kind of a big part of it for us when we harvest the grain from the field. everything needs to run through our just about the last 3 years, anything, almost everything we've harvested has gone through our grain dryer. So we're harvesting at a higher moisture to get the quality that we're looking for. And then we're running it through a grain dryer to take the moisture out, so it'll store for a long period of time. And like Hillary mentioned, yeah, we're trying to look at the big picture, like where we want to go. As far as like when we're laying out, like where we're putting grain bins and the grain dryer, it's a battle that I face every year. Last year, I think we moved four bins last year we put one in the way, so we couldn't add on to our building. And then we had to move a few others around to accommodate for our new grain dryer. Yeah, it's kind of a battle of where everything's going to go, and then trying to get that long term picture of where you want to go.
Josh, what's your favorite vehicle?
My favorite vehicle?
At your farm.
I mean, I wish I could go sit in tractors more often, but I'm usually at the Malta. It's my title is more of a project manager, so I'm mainly on just the expansion side of things. I'm always growing things, and I do a lot of the maintenance as well. So I think my favorite tractor or favorite vehicle would be a tractor. Unfortunately, I don't get to sit in them too often anymore.
All right, Jesse. You know, I love thinking about the farms and the source of our beer. You know, for a number of years, I used to hear about farm to glass. You know, is that a phrase that you guys use? And what are some other phrases or, you know, slogans that you guys might have to help people understand this?
Ooh, plow to pint.
Oh, that's a good one.
field to ferment. Yeah, gosh.
Those are pretty good. Yeah.
Yeah, there's a couple. There's a distilling related one. Yeah.
Well, that's good. There's a lot here. It does go deep. And, you know, a lot of the Craft Maltsters Guild, a lot of their workshops definitely have specific, you know, specific knowledge as part of them. I noted, like, I've seen some with Hannah from Montana State University. What's the most popular, like, separate from the conference, like, the most popular type of workshop or online panel that you guys run?
I would say, I mean, for our membership, our like bi-monthly webinars that we do are pretty popular. Outside of membership, our conference is hands down our most popular event. You know, our advanced malting class is a very small scale of workshop. But it definitely is popular in its own right. And this year, in fact, it's the registration's been filling up quite quickly. So we only actually have a handful of seats left.
Oh, that's great. Hey, and I'm going to give a shout out before we take a break. It's the second year in a row we've planned it, and now we're doing it I'm doing it with Blue Ox Malt at Novari Res. So if you're in Portland, Maine, on Thursday, March 16th from 4 to 6, while people are getting ready to start the conference. If anyone stops by Novari Res, we will be there. There will be at least some of the craft malt beers available. And just, I think we're calling it a mixer, Jesse, but thank you for encouraging us to do that. And I did get to check out Novari Res since we're talking Maine and Portland, which we're going to talk more about. I finally made it to Portland in December, just because I'd never been as an adult. And I went up for the day and I had a great time. Had some friends in the industry show me around. But my favorite spot of the whole day was my beer at Novari Res. So I think it's a great beer town. I think it's a really great spot for this conference. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
This episode is brought to you by Wisconsin Cheese. There's a reason when you think of Wisconsin, you think cheese.
Cheese is a huge part of Wisconsin's history and future. In Wisconsin, the state of cheese, the tradition of cheesemaking excellence began 180 years ago, before Wisconsin was recognized as a state. Immigrants traveled to settle in this lush, green hills of Wisconsin, bringing their cheesemaking traditions with them. These storied skills combined with the freshest milk available created a cheesemaking culture that is uniquely Wisconsin. Wisconsin's 1,200 cheesemakers, many of whom are third and fourth generation, continue to pass on old world traditions while adopting modern innovations in cheesemaking craftsmanship. Find your next favorite cheese at wisconsincheese.com.
Hey, hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni. I'm the host. Give us a big support at heritageradionetwork.org. Become a member and learn more about food, farming, and drinks and everything else on heritageradionetwork.org. So we got Jesse Boussard, Craft Malt Conference, and crew. This is a very interesting show. I'm always trying to go a little deeper, and I also realize what little I know about the science of malt and even fermenting. This is a great little group of people here, Jesse. Sean, I want to hear more about your craft malt conference talk. So you'll be talking about craft malt and lagers. What are some of the topics or talking points that you're going to cover in that?
I don't know the exact talking points. John Hall will be moderating it, but the general brushstroke of the session is going to be a conference basically across three different vantage points of local malt in lager, specifically lager. So one of them being always using local malt for your lager program, one of them being sometimes opting for local malt and sometimes opting elsewhere, and lastly, never using local malt. And the idea of the session isn't to, you know, downplay any of those opinions, but more so that those listening in and the folks on the panel can just really dive in deeper to the conversation of why they make certain decisions. So hopefully that can all inform other brewers and maltsters on how they can approach these conversations from a marketing standpoint, from a recipe development standpoint, and from a final product standpoint. So on behalf of the seed, mainly because Amanda really does not like speaking engagements, I'll be speaking to our lager program, which is always using Hillary's or Rabbit Hills malt. Fava from Sacred Profane will be speaking to always using Czech malt. And is it are we all confirmed, Hillary? Can I say
that? Yeah, we're confirmed. Yes.
So Justin, one of the brewers, head brewer for Schilling up in Littleton, New Hampshire, will be speaking to their options or decision-making process based on beer and whatever else goes through their minds as to why they will sometimes opt for local malt and why they will sometimes opt for European malts.
Wow, looking forward to that one. That one sounds really great. And that's definitely worth a follow-up. Jesse, are you recording these sessions?
Yeah, actually we are. And the cool thing is the sessions are going to be live streamed. So people will be able to actually tune in and watch them as they're happening. And then they'll be recorded right on time as they're happening and then available on demand afterwards. So to anybody that registered virtually for the conference. So we've made it very, very accessible to anyone who wants to tune in.
Great. And are there still spots available at the hotel?
I believe so.
Yeah.
But I would definitely call to ASAP to confirm.
That sounds great. Portland, Maine has, to me, it's a great beer town. There's been a mystique building for years. I'm really happy to be going, and I'm glad that you guys are doing it there. Let's talk about the Maine agriculture session, because that one's really neat. You've got Josh from Maine Malt and Joel from Blue Ox. That says the agricultural landscape of Maine and how malting and food grains fit into the state's ag economy. Now, I follow a little bit of Northeast grains and some New York State grains and main grains. So that's why when I mentioned, you know, rotating crops and you know, staple crops and small grains or whatever, it keeps popping up that there's something going on in Maine. So, Jesse, what should we talk
about? I think that Joshua's talk's going to be really interesting. And I would love to hear what he's planning to maybe focus on in that.
Yeah, I'd love to hear that as well. No, I'm kidding. I wrote an outline for the presentation before
this call.
My brother Jacob usually would handle this stuff, but him and his wife are expecting a child at the exact same time as the conference. So he slid me into the speaking spot. But we're just going to, I think Joel and I, what we want to do is we want to cover like what the farmland and crops, like kind of an overview of like Maine in general, because there's a lot of farmland in Maine. And then kind of like what the big crops are and like how much of that farmland is dedicated to those crops. Maybe some like how it's changed too over the years, because it used to be quite a bit more. And actually a fun tidbit is we used to have 200 acres of hops grown in Maine before potatoes were a thing. And actually right in our town, there's 200 acres of hops growing. Maybe I'll put that in the presentation.
That's interesting.
But then we're going to talk about kind of like how we farm. We do like conventional planting as well as no-till. So I'm going to take a look at that. And then I'm going to talk about a little bit of our malt house and how we malt, I guess, on that. And then Joel will probably take over from there, talking about his malt house and a little more on the end of selling to the breweries in that topic. So should be a good all the way through from the farmland all the way through to the brewery
talk. So you're gonna learn a lot just from preparing for this talk.
I will learn a lot from preparing for this. Yeah, I keep joking with Jake if he's got my presentation done yet, which he hasn't apparently. So, but no, it should be a good talk on covering kind of an overview of how we do it in Maine. I think that if I went to another state, that's what I'd want to learn is kind of like how they do it in their state, because I know every state is different as far as growing season, growing region, and that type of thing. So just to give everyone a little bit of a view of how we do it in Maine.
Yeah. Sean, have you been up to Portland? Are you curious about anything up there?
It's been a long time since we've been up in Portland. Man and I went up when Allagash did their friendship festival with Canteon and Russian River. I guess that was probably 2015 or so. So it's been a good 7-8 years since we've been up. We're real excited.
Yeah, and Mike from Sacred Profane, that's really making quite a buzz in the beer world. They're not too far from Portland. It's in Biddeford, Maine.
Yep.
Yeah, they're only about 20-30 minutes away, I think.
Yep. Yeah, just in the south.
Jesse, do you have any brewery tours lined up for the conference?
Yeah, Allagash is going to be hosting tours. They are our only brewery tour at the conference, but definitely the best brewery probably to tour in Portland. So, there will also be tours of Blue Ox Malt House in Lisbon Falls, which is just about, I think, around 30 minutes north of Portland. So two interesting opportunities.
Yeah.
And I think it'll be, I'm excited too to just hear a little bit about the difference between how Joel looks at things from a floor maltster's perspective and how the Bucks are doing it with their more, they do more mechanized malting. So it'll be cool to learn about that.
Josh, you want to say anything about that now? You waited to do your homework.
No, I'm also looking forward to hearing. No, I'm just kidding. I think it'll be a good talk on, because Joel's approach is a little bit different than ours, I think. And so it'd be good to get both of our kind of perspectives on that and how we're utilizing. I mean, we're basically using the same grains, but making different products out of it. So
Well, you got Hillary. So, Hillary, what about floor malting versus mechanized malting?
Ooh, that's a very broad question.
I don't know anything. I just like that Jesse brought that up as a theme. But.
Well, I think it's really interesting the way that all of these small differences kind of stack on top of each other to create this final malt that that is representative of that land and that malt house and that barley variety, and before it ever even gets to a brewer or a distiller. So I think one of the things that is that's interesting to me is to, I hope we get to maybe taste some malt from Buck Brothers and Maine Malt House. Like if they had a malt that was made out of the same grain, but malted in those two different systems, like what differences can you parse out there? Those kinds of things are really intriguing to me. It's like, where does flavor difference generate?
I just had an idea. I think that Josh and Joel should both do hot steeps of a similar malt style of the same variety during their presentation, and then like offer samples to the audience. That would be interesting, wouldn't it?
It would be interesting. See, Josh, we're doing the presentation for you. You thought it was going to be your brother, but I hope you're taking notes.
Taking notes right now, yeah.
It's just an idea, but I just literally, this idea sparked in my head as she was talking about that. Yeah.
We're taking audio notes. It's on Heritage Radio Network.
So. Perfect.
This is going to be like, it'll be a great sensory experience, and we'll be able to explore this like this difference in what do we call a house flavor, maybe?
House flavor?
Yeah.
We do have a floor malting system, and we actually run everything through our floor malting before running it on our like pneumatic system.
Yeah.
And because we found we do get different flavors from it. And typically we're trying to match those flavors that we get on the floor on our pneumatic system.
Yeah. But I bet there will still be slight differences.
There has to be. Yeah, for sure.
So it'd be an interesting just experiment.
Well, I'll write it down.
This is good, Jesse. Keep going. Come on. what else do you want them to do? I mean, this is.
Well, Josh, Hillary requested malt samples as well, so don't forget your malt samples.
What else do you want them to do, Hillary?
Oh, geez.
Well, why not? It's the lead. I mean, it answered the question I had, is, you know, why do this conference in Maine? Obviously, there's a lot going on there with agriculture and history. So, and you as a maltster, you want to see differences in techniques. You want to learn from it, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that we're in New Jersey. I'm the only malt house here, right? So the way that we do it is we're just on an island, right? So I love to kind of parse apart those little differences that you get from different systems. And I also love to tour malt houses. I think that we all have so many opportunities to learn from each other, even when you're malting in a different equipment setup or a totally different system. There's still learnings to be found there. So, it's kind of just on the conference for me is just a little larger scale of this conversation that we're having today, where, you know, maybe one part of a conversation sparks a little idea or another, hey, wouldn't that be cool? And then all of a sudden you're somewhere totally different. So, that's just what I would like to see out of all the presentations is people at the end, walking out with a new idea or a new understanding or some talking point that they're going to bring up with somebody else in the industry later that night or next week.
That's great. Back to the beer, because we're going to close out soon. Jesse, think of your closing statement. But Sean, what beers or just breweries beers do you want to try when you're in Portland? Because I've been trying to catch up. I've been drinking Bissell. I never had Bissell until recently.
Yeah, I think you kind of mentioned it before. We're certainly hoping to get out to Sacred Profane so that we could check out what Brianne and Fava had done with their new spot. Their beers have always been fantastic. So we're looking forward to seeing what the Tank Pub's like. And other than that, I'm hopeful to steal a little bit of time to go meet up with Tim at Oxbow. Always love their beer. So taste some of their beer, some of their Saison, and talk about fishing for a little while on the ancillary side of the malt conversations.
All right. Josh, any beers that we should try? You know, you got your malt at 120 different breweries.
Yeah, you're listing off some good ones. Bissell Brother, they got some very good beers. Tim at Oxbow, definitely. I mean, that's one of my top spots in Portland is the Oxbow Brewery. Bellflower is right there, not too far from Oxbow. They're making some good beers. I haven't been in Portland in a while, to be honest. So I'm a little out of the loop, but I know there's a lot of good beers. Allagash obviously is going to be a great stop, especially for the tour. They do an excellent tour there. Really in depth. Everyone at the brewery is pretty knowledgeable on what's going on. So yeah,
that's great. And Jesse, so we can still sign up for the conference, right?
You sure can. Registration will remain open till the week before the conference. Yeah. And I hope that everybody will come on out and celebrate 10 years of craft malt with us. It's going to be a lot of fun. And I know that we're really excited to get everybody back together.
Well, this is the kind of show I like. I'm really thirsty. I got one of the Bissell. It's an orange, double dry hop IPA, 7.5%. It's in an orange can, and I can't figure out the name of it. Regenerator or something. But it's pretty good. I'm going to go crack one of those. Anybody else got a beer they're going to crack?
Oh, you guys aren't drinking beer during this?
Well, I'm on a computer, you know. No liquids near the computer. I don't know.
Oh, I've had two during it, so I don't know.
What do you got, Josh?
I'm actually drinking a pale ale that's made in our in-house. We have like a little lab brewery set up where we trial some different malts that we produce on it. So it's like a pale ale. It's got a couple different malts that we produced on it. It's a bit on the bitter side. We haven't quite figured the brewery out yet, but it's good. It's very drinkable.
I'll tell you what, the mixer we do on March 16th at Novaria Res, will you bring one of your little tests?
I'll see if there's any left. I don't know. I think that
you got 2 months. Come on.
2 months.
Yeah.
It's true.
He's got a presentation to do. Don't distract him.
Too late.
You know, you got Hillary and Jesse on your side, so we're all gonna. But and Hillary, you got any beer going on right now?
I didn't crack one before the show, so I'm gonna have to go grab what's in my fridge when I get done. But I would bet it's probably going to be a lager from the Seed.
Well, that sounds really good. And Sean, what are you drinking, bro?
I'm not gonna lie, I drank a glass of whiskey while we were talking, so no beer for me today.
What kind of whiskey?
I was drinking a McKenna. One of my favorites.
McKenna. All right.
And Jesse, anything?
Just kombucha.
I like that too. And we didn't really talk too much about distilling and, you know, the importance of craft malt in that industry. Mm-hmm. But looking forward to learning more about it at the conference. And we know that that's another growing part of the craft malt world. So thanks so much for joining me, Jesse, Sean, Josh and Hillary. Big shout out to Armin Spengen, our engineer. I'm Jimmy Carboni. I'm the host of Beer Sessions Radio. We will catch you next time on Heritage Radio Network. And if you're interested in beer and malt and whiskey and farming, check out Portland, Maine, the Craft Malt Conference, March 16th to 18th. All right, we'll catch you next time. Woo! Thank you. Beer Sessions Radio is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network. Food Radio supported by you. Keep in touch at heritageradionetwork.org/subscribe.
Hi, listeners. We want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway, and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Alweli, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode? Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.